You're listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. For more information and to support the show, head to wespeakcommon.com.
This week, I'm joined by Ray to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of legendary resistances and why his new Kickstarter for legendary eminences is exactly what you're looking for. Welcome to We Speak Common. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the D&D podcast for everyone, because here we speak common. This is the show brought to you in partnership with the Dice Dungeon, your one-stop shop for all things D&D related, whether it be dice rolling trays, bags of fate, or even, you know, the books you need to run the dungeons and or dragons. If you want to get 10% off your entire order, support the show and a UK business, head to the description of this episode below to find a link over to their humble abode and use the code WESPEAKCOMMON at checkout for 10% off your entire order. We're also brought to you in partnership with Describe, spelled D-S-C-R-Y-B. Describe is the place to go if you're not very good at doing the creative scene setting in your D&D games. They have professional creative writers sitting down and expertly describing locations, monsters, spells, and things that you can read as a DM or a player at your table. If you want to go check them out, there's a link below. There's a load of free scenes to look at. But if you want to get a full fledge of access, that's not a phrase, but we'll go with it. You can use the code COMMON at checkout to get 10% off your subscription every month for the first 2 years that you are subscribed. As always, we will talk about our wonderful partners at some point during this episode. But right now, here he is, my friend and yours, Mr. Ray. How are you doing?
I'm doing great today, Ben. How are you?
I too am doing very, very good. I've had a very good day, despite the fact that it's a Monday when we're recording this, and it's also grey and wet outside. I've had a really nice kind of like just fun day. And I've got D&D later. I get to talk to you right now about some really cool D&D stuff. So yeah, it's all good. It's all very good.
I feel like any day that's packed with D&D is just guaranteed to be a good day.
Well, you say that, but then pretty much every day of my life is packed full of D&D, because at some point I think about it every single day. So there is that, but I think it's the difference between thinking about it alone and thinking about it and talking about it with other people.
Well, they say the plan is everything and the plan is nothing. So I imagine that all of that time that you spend thinking about Dungeons and Dragons alone prepares you to use none of that preparation when you're playing with other people. Yep. Because the game just goes right off the rails.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. And we've had some great sessions recently. We've got a little bit of downtime coming up in the real world from D&D, which is a shame, but I'm a little bit thankful for it, because I've got a palate cleanse coming up of some Witcher based RPG games. So I'm really looking forward to that. And we've got two games going on, so we've got one that's kind of happening. So we're only down by like 50% D&D. I mean, it's not great, but it's not awful.
I think that people underestimate the value of kind of taking a deliberate pause from Dungeons and Dragons and going and doing some other stuff, sampling some other fantasy, and then you come back recharged with this new kind of passion for the game that you were playing. Whereas mm-hmm. before, if you fall into that cadence of once a week, you can kind of click into autopilot sometimes. It's not a guarantee, but yeah, sometimes a palate cleanser can be really good for a game.
And that's why I keep telling the group that once this campaign's done, I'm going to take a short break from DMing and just be a player for a little bit while I work on put my full time working on, because I'm still working on them, some things that are going on behind the scenes for the group. But I know that that's going to be really difficult to do. It's really hard to do, but it's worth it.
Yeah, nothing gets you excited to run Dungeons and Dragons like playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just like to be in the know and be in control, because I'm a control freak, so there's that too, but we won't get into that. We are going to dive into a topic that I don't think I would have been talking about if it weren't for the very specific circumstances that we're in, which sounds very vague and nonsensical, but it will make sense in a minute. So we're going to talk about legendary resistances and What's good about them? What's not good about them? How you can use them, how you can make them better, all that kind of stuff to help kind of bolster up your bigger, beefier monsters and maybe even your bosses in D&D games. But the reason we're talking about it and the reason we're looking at it in such a way is because you have a very special little project, or have had a very special project on the go, which is now ready to be talked about and let loose in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. We just released a Kickstarter, which is, I can't even believe that that's a sentence that I would say. But we've released a Kickstarter called Emery's Log of Legendary Eminences. And it's all about taking legendary resistances and maybe fixing some of the things that could be anticlimactic about them in your game, and just bringing some brand new flavor to those monsters that use legendary resistances.
Yeah, and it's a collaboration, that's what I'm looking for, between yourself and who else?
It's me, Ariel, Ian, and John from the Dragon Mind podcast are the creators and authors of the product. And then Jordan Serkin created this amazing Kickstarter video, which even if you're not going to back the project, you should just go and watch the video because Jordan just did an unbelievable, he blew it out of the water. And then Phoebe, We Speak Common's very own Phoebe Hammond, did an amazing job voice acting the mage, who is Emery, who narrates our Kickstarter video and has little kind of journal entries throughout the product.
Yeah.
So I feel very thankful to have worked with all of them to create this amazing project.
And yourself and Ariel obviously have your own podcast running off the rails as well, which is the two partnerships is you guys and the other two being the authors behind it all.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. So we're gonna get into that. We're gonna talk about those ideas. Obviously, we're not gonna give everything away because we want to back the Kickstarter. But we're gonna talk about the idea and maybe a little bit of the execution. We'll see how much you want to give away, Ray. But before we do that, we're gonna talk more broadly about legendary resistances and how to really focus on them in your games in general. So if you want to know more about the Kickstarter, there'll be a link in the description below and about the book in general, and obviously at the end of this episode too. And just to add a nice little cherry on top, Ray and the guys have very graciously allowed me to give away a copy to somebody. We don't know who yet, we'll find out. So if you're keen on getting your hands on a copy, then keep listening. We'll give you all the details at the end of the episode when we talk more about the Kickstarter in detail. Okay, let's dive into legendary resistances. That's hard to say. Legendary resistances first, and what they are and how they work. So, I think our relationship, Ray, right, where it comes to D&D Minds, is we complement each other in different areas, and I love this because this is something I would never have thought about changing. And like my kind of opinion is, or was, legendary resistances, they're cool, they're quick, they're snappy, you know, you try to do something, nah, don't work, legendary resistances, and the whole thing is you've got to burn through them. Once you burn through them, it's just that added wall in it, and it stops, you know, just stops the instant kill, basically. And for a long time, I was just very much like, okay, that's cool, that's how it works. Which, looking back, hindsight, it's very not me, because usually I'm like, oh, everything needs to be flavorful and story. And legendary resistances is one of those things where they're just, nope, doesn't work, move on. There's no narrative to that. There's no explanation as to why. So I never had this issue before. And now that I've thought about it and I've sat and I've gone, there's no reason for that to. Now I'm kind of like a little bit uncomfortable with it. So how did you feel about it? What was it that that made you go, oh, this is a thing that we should think about more?
Yeah. So I had known that I really wanted to create more content. So I had been brainstorming a lot of ideas. And whenever I ran across somebody talking about something in the game that they thought was bad or wrong, I would write it down because there's an idea there, right? If I could fix this, maybe I can, people will want this and it will help them and their table. And this was the best idea, right? So I was watching a popular streamer and they basically said, I think legendary resistances should be removed from the game. They're very anti-fun because your players are going to use their most powerful and best abilities, and then nothing happens. So we should remove legendary resistances. I understand why they're in the game, but we should remove them. And I was watching this stream and I was like, no, that's all wrong. I love legendary resistances. It adds this whole extra layer of tactical shenanigans to these epic boss fights. I love the choice when you're the wizard and you have that dragon that's flying and doing like fly-by breath weapon attacks. And you know they have three legendary resistances. And you have your spells that you've prepared for the day. Choosing the right spell, the spell that is low enough level, but just detrimental enough where that dragon is going to need to burn a resistance or want to burn a resistance is so much fun because that's a choice. That's a deliberation that I need to go through as the player. Whereas if legendary resistances didn't exist, the choice is obvious. Use your most powerful ability. Why would you use anything less? That's why spells like Fairy Fire and Phantasmal Force, where like if you hit the dragon with a Phantasmal Force and you make it believe that its wings are chained up or it has like weights on it so that it can't fly anymore. I mean, a grounded dragon is a dead dragon, right? So that dragon has to use a legendary resistance to repel that, what, it was a level like 2 spell that you used to get it to believe that. I was blown away that this person would suggest removing this whole dynamic from the game that I loved, but their criticisms made sense, right? Like legendary resistances shut down narrative at the table in a way that Counterspell is often described as doing, but at least with Counterspell, it's somebody else who's casting a spell against your spell. With legendary resistances, it just says, if you fail, choose to succeed. Like there's nothing there to work with. So we needed to come up with a way to make legendary resistances narrative and dynamic and a part of the story, something tangible that your players could see and feel and interact with. And that's what I hope we've done with legendary eminences.
So I think we're in a very similar boat, or at least in the same space, because I don't think there's anything wrong with legendary resistances apart from the fact that they could be a bit more, right? Now that I really analyze them, I think that they are the antithesis of the game part of Dungeons and Dragons. Like I always talk about how D&D is half storytelling, half game, and that's what makes it different from just improv around a table. There is a game, there are rules, there are dice, and there's random outcome. And I think Legendary Resistances are exactly that. They're purely 100% the game side of D&D, and that's good. You need that. You need that in there, and you're right. You need something like Resistances to stop just instantly destroying creatures. As a DM, it's one of my favorite things for my players to come up against a creature and use a spell or an effect. And then I'm like, no, it's going to burn one of it. Oh, yeah, it's going to burn a legendary resistance. And then they all go, oh, my God, it's got legendary resistance. Ah. And then they start thinking about, okay, how many would it have? Do you think it's got 1, 3, or 5? Okay, what should we try? Should we try doing this? Should we try doing that? And then there's this kind of like, will it, won't it use another resistance? Does it, doesn't it have another one? And that kind of back and forth is so much fun for me as a player and as a DM, but it is purely the game side of D&D. And then the other thing I love doing is taking a creature that doesn't have resistances and giving them it, or taking a creature that usually has them and giving them more, because it throws the players off, especially when, you know, like my group or the majority of it, you've been playing for 9 years and everyone knows a dragon has them and whatnot. So I think we're in the same place, but yes, looking at them now, 100%, they could be more balanced in the sense of a little bit storytelling and narrative around them rather than just purely you choose to succeed. So let's talk about using legendary resistances. I want to kind of start off in the like the legendary resistance 101 area. We know what they are. They're an ability on a creature that says if it fails a saving throw, it can burn a legendary resistance and then choose to succeed it, which great, love it. So if you're casting slow on the dragon and it has a legendary resistance and it fails that saving throw, no, it doesn't. It passes, but it now has two legendary resistances instead of three. And I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Ray, but I think there's creatures with one, there's creatures with three, and there's creatures with five. And I think that's it.
I actually don't know if that's true, because I thought the same thing going into the writing of this product, because I similarly have put a legendary resistance on a monster who hasn't had it in the past. To stop my players from like polymorphing it. Like if you're going up against a young dragon, typically your players have access to spells like banishment and polymorph, fight ending spells, where the players can grab the thing that they came to get while the dragon is banished, and then they can just run. You don't have to slay the thing that you're fighting. You're there for some other plot reason. So I always give young dragons one legendary resistance. And then I've seen live play content where like god level enemies have been given more than three. I think Tiamat has five legendary resistances, so you might be right there. But she might be the only entity that does in dungeon, that she might be unique in that way.
Okay.
But I do love this idea. Give your monster the number of legendary resistances that you think is appropriate for how epic they are, you know?
Mm, yeah, 100%. And we've talked about Counterspell before, so we've talked about a very similar kind of thing. There's a lot of subjectiveness to this. Like when you said this creator that inspired you had said, oh, it's anti-fun. In my brain, I'm like, no. If anything, it's most fun for me. It's the game side of the game. Like that's the fun part of the game, is like, oh, I've been foiled by a legendary resistance. Ah, oh, silly me. I won't be fooled again because now I know it's got them, and I'll think about everything I do. Just like you said, you know, it's about picking the right spells and things. So forgetting the book that you've written, because we'll get to that in a little bit. What advice would you give to someone listening right now, you know, ignoring the book or pretending it hasn't been backed yet, you know, it's not there, they haven't got it yet. What would you say they could do right now tonight with their creature that has legendary resistances to make them more fun if they feel that kind of, ugh, I'm just going to tell them they fail or it succeeds?
Absolutely. Yeah, there are some distinct things that you can do to make legendary resistances as written way more successful at your table. The first thing that I would advocate that a dungeon master should do is they should find some type of mechanism in their game that foreshadows or signals to your players that the creature that they're fighting against has legendary resistances. If you are playing in the Forgotten Realms, this could be something that is like a shimmer in the weave that surrounds this creature as it has manifested this like ancient magical resistance, so that you don't have to tell your players this creature has legendary resistances, because they know that when you say that about the world, this creature has legendary resistances. And it gives your player character a way to act tactically without needing to metagame, right? So if I were playing a wizard and I decide to cast Phantasmal Force on the dragon instead of my strongest spell, that's like, oh, well, why did you do that? Why did you use a weak spell instead of a strong spell? Like your character doesn't know that this creature has legendary resistances. That kind of removes the fun, I think. I think you need to put your players in a situation where right on that first round of combat, they are empowered to play tactically against this creature. Because no one wants to be handcuffed going into what is supposed to be an all-out boss fight.
Yeah, I really like as well that what you can do with this is if you want to keep that oh my god moment of revealing that the creature just succeeds, chooses to succeed, you can have it be that narrative moment. So if we're using the shimmery kind of force fieldy aura kind of description, the players might not see it, or the characters might not see it when they first start fighting. And when the creature uses its legendary resistance, let's say, I don't know, the wizard casts Ray of Enfeeblement. I don't know, I'm just picking around a spell off the top of my brain because that's quite a low level spell. But and it goes to hit the creature and they fail the save to take its effects. When you say they use legendary resistance, you describe the shimmer appearing and the ray hitting the shimmer and it acting as like a kind of force field. You do that narrative description and then you say, so it's going to use one of its legendary resistances. And then your players go, okay, so it's got legendary resistances and there's this thing that we can see that it's clearly showing that it's using them. And then your wizard next turn says, oh, Ben, can I see that shimmering field? And I go, yeah, it's there, but it's fainter. And they go, right. Okay, it's still got resistances.
Yep. That is a perfect way to signal to your players in a way that isn't going to like bog down your game, this like separate health pool that they're working against. Mm-hmm. Another thing that DM should be extremely wary about, I almost wish I had brought this up first, is make sure that players that are new players that have never ever heard of what a legendary resistance is at all have a way to know that they kind of exist. Mm-hmm. Because if you are a new player and you're going into this epic combat and you manage to get your spell through, because these epic creatures have really good saving bonuses typically. So it's a huge accomplishment to even have a spell stick in the first place. And then they find out what a legendary resistance is because you're just telling them that they decide to succeed instead. Mm-hmm. First of all, they might think that you're just cheating because it sounds like something a four-year-old would say.
Actually, I'm just going to win.
Yeah, exactly. No. I change the rules so that I win every time.
Is that not what you do as a DM? Is that not how you play this game?
I think it is, actually. So that's my first rule is like, maybe not going into that combat, maybe a few sessions before, outside of the game, you might just flip through your monster manual and be like, yo, take a look at this sick monster that has nothing to do with your game and be like, take a look at this and point them at what a legendary resistance is so that they're aware that this is a mechanic that exists in the game. I think that's probably a good call.
It's one of those things like you want to bamboozle your players in the sense that you want to surprise them and shock them, but you don't want to bamboozle them to feeling like they're just not having fun. Like it's got to be a half bamboozle in a way.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like the thing with this is and it's the same with counterspell. And I think this is something that I said when we talked about counterspell specifically, you are telling your player no, and you're telling your player you fail, but in a fun way. And I think, and this is why I'm so surprised I never picked up on this on my own, especially when I think back to our conversations with Counterspell, is I've always said, oh, well, with Counterspell, you don't just say, ah, oh, actually, you get Counterspell, it fails. You describe the spell failing and what it looks like and how cool it is. And you give the player a moment where they feel powerful, but they don't succeed, so that when they do succeed, it's even better. But with legendary resistances, everybody's just going, nope, he burns a legendary resistance and succeeds. So do the same thing. Describe that kind of moment of the shift in scales where the player thinks, that's it, I've got him. I'm on the upper foot. I have the high ground. Weird reference. And I'm going to win. And then something changes. And that's when you bamboozle them. But describe them being powerful and strong. Don't just say, actually, no.
Absolutely. And then I think another element that is important to touch on to help legendary resistances be successful at your table is get your players excited about this extra challenge that's going to be put in front of them or this thing that they'll have to contend with, as opposed to, because I think a lot of players rightfully have a negative connotation with legendary resistances. Like, I hate legendary resistances. They're just not fun. I would like to issue a challenge to those players that are out there. Maybe change your mindset a little bit. Like, it is a puzzle. It's kind of like in a video game when you are fighting against the first form of that end boss monster, where you need to weaken it. And then once you get through that first bar of health, now the fight changes in some meaningful way. And this is a signal to dungeon masters too, that you can have the environment changing as a result of how many legendary resistances your monster has. Maybe the stage is getting smaller. Maybe if you're fighting like an ancient red dragon, the volcano is becoming more active as they use legendary resistances, which maybe was the mechanism that was like subduing the volcano beforehand. There's so many things that you can do to interact with your world with legendary resistances. And as players, like, try to like look at your spell list and be like, which of these spells are really nasty, but are on the lower level. We talked about Phantasmal Force. We talked about Fairy Fire. If you can get Fairy Fire to stick, that's going to be game changing. Bane, if you can get Bane to stick on the boss monster.
Slow.
And also damaging spells. So if you have tons of high level spells at your disposal, pop off that max level fireball, knowing that the dragon can choose to auto succeed, but they're still taking half damage on a max level evocation spell. That's a big chunk of damage, and they burned a legendary resistance. If I can get my dungeon master to burn a legendary resistance on a spell where I'm still doing damage, that's a huge, I'm like, you fool. I've got you right where I want you.
100%. And like, going back to your thing about the environment changing and things, a lot of these creatures with legendary resistances are creatures that have lair actions. Tie them into the lair actions. You know, if you're, I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head, but let's say you're fighting, I don't know, a swamp monster, and the lair action is that it makes it foggy so that people can't see. Okay, well, they burn a legendary resistance and, you know, the fog gets worse or it goes away a little bit. You know, like, you can tie it into those regional kind of telltale signs that are unique to these creatures as well. Just because it's a separate thing on a stat block doesn't mean it can't be linked in. I think there are, I mean, I don't want to say it with such certainty, because I guess I was so certain that there wasn't an issue with them, but I don't think I've ever come across someone who has said to me, I hate legendary resistances. I think they're stupid and they shouldn't be in the game. because I think my experience, and this is what I think you're trying to say, you're trying to implore people to have this outlook. My experience has always been, okay, this creature's got legendary resistances. What can I do? Like, let's start thinking tactically. Let me plan how I'm going to fight it. And I get, you know, if you're not into combat and stuff, if you're, that's not your main draw to D&D, then that's tricky to get into. But for us at our table, I think, like, when we recently in our Tyranny game, which I know Ray, you're not in, we fought a Raffator. If you've played Tyranny, then you'll know who that is. If not, big white dragon. And we spent a lot of time planning, and James was like, I'm going to make a cup of tea. You guys plan what you want to do. And I had to build out my spell list as the party wizard. And I was like, okay, well, I've got this one to burn through a legendary resistance. I've got this one, which would be really cool if it worked, but if it doesn't, it'll get rid of the resistance. And then, and like, I'm sitting there going, okay, I need to burn off three legendary resistances, because then I can do this really cool thing where I can cast hold monster and I can make him just plummet to the ground. Mm-hmm. Which would be mega in a dragon fight, and it would make me feel so powerful as the party wizard, and was such a cool moment that I wanted to get. Didn't get it, but not because like it wasn't run well or I didn't plan enough or anything like that. It was just that the fight went a different way, but it meant that all the way through the combat, I had this goal of burn the resistance, burn the resistance, burn the resistance, do the cool thing, have the cool moment. And I guess the danger there, now I'm saying it out loud, is you might feel disappointed if you don't get that moment, but it gives you kind of like a plan of, okay, what am I going to do? What is my optimal move here? How do I achieve the thing I want to achieve? What's my to-do list? And it stops you from feeling like you don't know what you're doing or what you should do in a combat, which for me is, just a lot of fun. It's like, oh, how am I going to get there?
So that anecdote that you just shared brings me to one of the core reasons why I believe that legendary resistances are not complete in their current iteration in Dungeons and Dragons. I think it's the beginning of an awesome way to make your boss monsters more epic and to defend against these spells like Feeble Mind, Polymorph that end combats in a single round of combat. Maybe one of your players is playing a Chronergy Wizard and they're getting a +8 to their initiative. And the bard.
Sorry. My war wizard gets a +9. Just want to put that out there. Thank you.
All right. Point. Case in point. This is a mechanic that needs to exist in the game, in my opinion. But it is lacking because you run into this situation where your spellcaster is picturing this awesome, fantastical moment where they're burning through legendary resistances so that they can get to this awesome spell thing that they want to do. And the other members of the party typically are not contributing or collaborating because they can't, because they're typically only half casters or one third casters or just martial characters. And it's almost as if your spellcasters are fighting against a completely separate, completely separated health pool than the other characters at the table. And it creates this really weird race where you're almost racing against the other members of the party to see who can deplete. Like, are we going to deplete the legendary resistances first and end the combat that way? Or are we going to deplete the health pool first and end the combat that way? And then in either scenario, if you polymorph the dragon or feeble mind the dragon, all the damage that the martial characters did throughout that combat is inconsequential because the combat was over once you landed that spell. And the reverse is true. Ben, how many legendary resistances did the dragon have left at the end of the combat? I don't actually know.
I've got to think back now.
Was it one?
I think actually it had all of them left because, and this is where my counterpoint comes in. I know you kind of haven't finished your point, but for us as a group, when we, and this is why I think planning and playing as a group is so important, when we planned what we were going to do and what our route was, my whole thing was, okay, I've got a lot of concentration spells. I'm a war wizard. I'm good at concentrating on things. Let me fire off a bunch of them to get the resistances down. And then once the resistances are down, if I can't get the whole monster off, the other thing I've got is I've got a fighter over there who I can haste, who I can, and my artificer can give her fly. Right. So that was the other thing. And just the way combat went, the way we spread out as a party, the way the dragon reacted to our approach, you know, all those things that can change in D&D, no matter how much you plan for, because of all that stuff, I ended up hasting the fighter straight away. And then, you know, I didn't get the chance to burn those resistances. So it's swings and roundabouts, I think, is what I'm trying to say. And even though I felt less optimal, I actually said to the group afterwards, like, I don't feel like I did much in that fight. That all of my party members turned around and said, Ben, don't be an idiot. You gave the fighter haste. That's how we killed the dragon, because she could do so much.
Right.
And I think it's just remembering that you're a team and you have to work together. But your analogy is right. The whole thing of like going against two different like health pools in a way is 100% accurate. I just think that maybe the frame of reference needs to change slightly, and it needs to be, okay, plan A is we are currently geared up better to get those health points down. But while we're doing that, all of our spellcasters are also going to be working on plan B, which is to burn through those resistances in case, you know, we lose our barbarian.
Yep, absolutely. And I think you're kind of a glass half full player too. So I would expect that you would find a way to contribute, not only contribute in a meaningful way in that combat, but also feel good about that contribution.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that you didn't burn through any legendary resistances.
That we might have burned through one. I'm trying to remember. It's either none or one.
No, by the, like, anyway. it proves the point that just by the fact that legendary resistances exist, you decided, oh, it is not, it wouldn't make sense for me to go in this direction. I should go with the flow of my party and haste my fighter rather than kind of trying to solo my way through these legendary resistances.
Yeah.
And potentially make no contribution to the combat at all, because all of my spells will just be deflected by legendary resistances.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing to, and an important thing if you're listening to this episode, to sit down and think about and like go through your experiences as a DM, go through your experiences as a player and think, okay, how do I feel about what's being said and what, and the way these resistances work and that kind of thing. Think about it with your frame of reference of what you've experienced and put it through that filter of, was that fun? Did I do what I wanted to do? Do I think these are a problem? Do I think they're fine? And you might come away from it and go, do you know what? Legendary resistances are fine. I don't care. Just having the ability now, the frame of mind now to give them a bit of a narrative twist is enough for me. Off I go. Happy Larry. Which, I mean, great. Wonderful. Good. Because that's easily accessible, right? But if you are still feeling like, oh yeah, you're right, these are just snip, snap, done, boring, and I want more from them, that's where the legendary eminences come into play. So before we dive into that, Ray, let's have a word from our sponsors. I couldn't think of a good segue today. This show
I would have seen it coming. You can't fool me.
I know. You've been here far too many times now. This show is brought to you in partnership with the Dice Dungeon. You know them, our wonderful friends over here in the UK. Yeah, believe it or not, there's more than just me here in the UK that likes D&D. It's not just me on my own flying the flag. There's loads of us. We're everywhere. We hide in the dark and the shadows, but we are here. And Ben and Dave are in the shadows of their own dungeon, their Dice Dungeon. They're a wonderful UK store who sell beautiful premium D&D dice. I'm talking metal, resin, gemstone, glass. There's so many different sets, and they are honestly all of them gorgeous. And I think I said this in an episode recently. I pulled out some of my older sets that I haven't used in a while because I got new shinier sets and I was enamored by them. And they're all so good. Just have a look, go and check out the website. Of course, there's other stuff on there too, like Bag of Fates, which lets you get a random set of dice, and it's the cheapest way to get some of the more expensive sets, but you never know what set you're going to get. So if you can't choose, too much choice, grab a Bag of Fates. D&D books, dice rolling trays to keep them safe, all that stuff. Go and have a look, support the show, head to Dice Dungeon. In the description, there's a link for you. You can use the code WESPEAKCOMMON at checkout for 10% off your entire order. The more you spend, the more you save. Treat yourself. Why not? It's been a tough first quarter of the year. God, we're only quarter of the way through. Bloody hell. Oh, God.
It's like insert any span of time and the statement will be true.
Hey, you've had a tough day. The
You've
last
had a
hour,
tough life, friend.
That's been it's been a rough hour. Okay, the last. Hang on, how long has this been going on for? The last half an hour has been a tough listen. Treat yourself to some dice.
We're real also slog.
Yeah. We're also brought to you in partnership with Describe. So DSCRYB. Describe with that trendy spelling is the place to go if you're not very good at describing things. If you want to be able to beautifully narratively tell your players that their big bad evil red dragon is using a legendary resistance, they've probably got you covered, to be honest. They've got over 7,500 scenes and growing. I have to check every time I do a little ad read for them each week. It goes up every single week. I'm not even joking. Describing locations, monsters, NPCs, spells being cast, items, all of that good stuff. There's maps for you to grab as well. And not only that, they have, this is my favorite thing, scenes written for players to read out. So if you're sat at the table and you want to describe as well as the wizard in your party, but you're just a fighter, they've got you covered with statements such as, I swing my battle axe and et cetera, et cetera. Go have a look, link in the description below, dscryb.com, and use the code COMMON at checkout to get yourself 10% off every single month of your subscription for the first 2 years you are subscribed. And of course, there's a bunch of free scenes on there to look at without subscribing. So go and try it before you buy it and see what you think. And of course, by doing that, you are supporting the show. Okay. Ray, I don't know how much you want to share today. I'm going to leave that up to you. But would you please, having now talked about legendary resistances and how we feel about them, please describe what are legendary eminences?
I'm just going to give away everything, Ben.
Oh, beautiful.
To your lovely listeners. So our product, Emery's Log of Legendary Eminences, is a collection of 36 abilities that are active on monsters while they still have legendary resistances up. So these are passive abilities that will make your monsters nastier, more interesting while they still have legendary resistances, and give your players something visible that they can interact with and see that is a physical representation of those legendary resistances in the world. Mm. We talked about how perhaps you could give monsters a shimmer, all monsters that have legendary resistances a shimmer earlier in the episode. For these eminences that we have in the book, each one is tailored specific to the monster that we are presenting. So allow me to present an example.
Mm-hmm.
It's my personal favorite, and it is also featured with animation in the Kickstarter video. So definitely go and check it out. JJ just blew that video out of the water. So this is the adult green dragon. The ability is called Wicked Hallucination. And there's a reminder here in the product that adult green dragons have 3 legendary resistances per day. Green dragons are known for their infamous guile and befuddling magical prowess. The dragon can create illusory duplicates of itself equal to the number of remaining uses of its legendary resistance. No action required. These duplicates surround the dragon and mimic its movements, shifting position so it's impossible to track which image is real. The illusory duplicates follow the same rules as those produced by the mirror image spell. However, the dragon regains illusory duplicates at the end of the turn, equal to the number of the dragon's remaining legendary resistances. Each time the dragon uses a legendary resistance, one of these illusory duplicates disappear.
Mm. Very nice. Very nice indeed. So it's a passive ability that you have, and I'm right in saying that these are all, you've written them specific for creatures. So these aren't generic abilities that you can just slap onto any creature. They are tailored to narratively, but also, I was going to say flavorfully, but that's not the right word. Narratively, but also, what is the word I'm looking
physically?
For? Physically? Physically. What I'm trying to say is that, as you've said, like, you can see them being used. You can see that there's a visual representation of the resistances.
Yeah. They're tactile.
Tactile, that's it. So they're tactile, they're tailored to the creature, they're unique. I like it. I like it a lot. And there's a note at the, I believe at the beginning of the book, where you talk about how these abilities, and some of them, I've not read all of them, there's 36 of the buggers,
mm-hmm.
but, which is amazing, which is good. But some of them are quite strong, and they up the CR of the creature. So what I love about this, apart from the fact that it does everything we've talked about today about adding that kind of level, and, you know, as I've said, that's something you can go away and do on a generic level with like a shimmer or whatever, but these are specific and unique to each creature. They take your dragon fight and make it a boss fight. You know, we've all fought a dragon before at this point, unless you're new to D&D. And even if you're new to D&D, I would say 9 times out of 10. Fighting a dragon is one of the things you do early in your D&D career, right? Because it's in the name, it's Dungeons and Dragons. I've fought so many dragons now that I'm like, okay, well, I'm something different from my dragons. So give me something new. This does that. And it does it on a specific dragon type and size scale, which is great to see.
Yeah, the ancient green dragon has a legendary eminence that is similar to the green dragons, but it gets so much more gnarly. you will know when you're fighting an ancient green dragon, because those duplicates get, I don't want to give anything away, but I'm very proud of the ability that I wrote for the green dragon. Mm-hmm. Something that you touched on this, Ben, something that I really love about this product, not from a, like, you should buy a perspective, something that I got just so much joy out of was reading through all the lore that exists for these creatures and monsters in Dungeons and Dragons history, and then comparing that narrative treasure trove to what exists on the stat block. And I started to realize that the stat blocks are very kind of sterile in some ways. The green dragon stat block is basically just the acid dragon stat block. It's a chromatic dragon with an acid breath weapon. You don't get any of the lore that is associated with green dragons that talk about how they have plots and schemes and how they're the most magical of all the different chromatic dragons, and mm-hmm. how they'll team up with your party just to stab them in the back at the opportune moment. Whereas when you talk about blue dragons and red dragons, they have very different personalities. They would never even pretend to team up with a group of adventurers for the purposes of eventually betraying them, that they're ants to them. I'm not going to make a deal with an ant come up. And being able to give these creatures an ability that I know will be used because it's up from the beginning of combat. So flavor, boom, in your combat, doing mechanical things in your combat, that really evokes that personality in the monster. It was just so much fun, and being able to collaborate with the other authors too and be like, this is an awesome ability. For the fire giant ability comes into mind. Originally we had written a fire giant ability that was cool. It had fire flavor. But we were
fire flavor,
fiery flavor. It tasted, it was and like it was spicy. It was like a red hot.
Chef's kisses.
Exactly. but when we were reading through the details of fire giants, very different from the other giants, they have this almost like feudal culture of kind of smithing and martial discipline. So we went back and we rewrote that ability for fire giants such that their that culture is present in their legendary eminence. And I think anyone who's out there, who's listening, who knows the SRD or the core Dungeons and Dragons monsters will realize 36 monsters is more monsters than have legendary resistances in the standard rules document. We have gone through and found monsters between CRs like 5 and 12, the zone where your players definitely have combat ending spells, but before legendary resistances are typically put on monsters. And we've given those stat blocks a single legendary resistance with a single with an eminence that is up for as long as that single resistance is still in play. And I like to think of these monsters as kind of like the named versions of these monsters.
So like the white dragon would be a Rathator. It's not just a random white dragon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly that. Where if you want a monster, so say you're playing through a Storm King's Thunder, and your players are fighting lots of giants, you want to give that one giant king or the leader of the clan, you want to make it clear that they are a cut above, that maybe they're more ancient or more powerful than those other giants. You give that single giant a legendary resistance and this legendary eminence. And I just want to hear stories about how that goes. I'm picturing it in my head and it feels amazing, but I want to hear how it actually plays out at people's tables. That's the part of this that I'm most excited for.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% understand that. I think for me, and I particularly it comes from the dragons because you've done the different sizes, is that you can look at that and go, okay, well, my party are fighting an adult dragon, an adult red dragon, for example, but I know they're going to have a tough time anyway, but I want to add this fun thing. You could decide to take the one from the young red dragon instead to have a lesser effect. Like you can chop and change these a little bit. And what's nice is that there's enough inspiration here to make something a little bit different if you find that there's not the creature you want listed in this particular tome. It's one of those, I think I said this to you off air before we started recording, it's one of those books where it gives you a really simple yet well thought out and well put together idea, goes, here's how we've done it for these guys, and then gives you enough room in your brain to go, oh, I could do that this way with this creature, which is a fantastic resource. I think for me, the reason I love this as much as I do is because it gives me mythic creature vibes. So I've talked about these a lot. If you haven't picked up Odysseys of Theros, the one reason you should is because there are mythic creatures, which are stat blocks that have mythic actions alongside their legendary actions. They get them after being reduced to zero hit points. It's like a second stage boss fight. It's a great concept. And one of my favorite third party products that's come out to do with those is taking known D&D creatures, named D&D people, Aserak, Vecna, not Vecna,
the Demogorgon.
The Demogorgon, you know, Zariel, if you're running Descent, and giving them mythic stat blocks and making them bigger. These legendary eminences feel like that, but for legendary resistances. And I think that's great, especially when one of the main things that we hear over and over again in the D&D community is, my big bad evil guy can't be a standard stat block. It's going to have to be homebrew because there's nothing strong enough, or there's nothing unique enough, or any of that. This, along with like a mythic version of a stat block, and then give it the lore and the story and the flavor from your campaign, you've got a unique creature there and you've not had to do as much work, and it's going to go down like a bomb in a good way.
And if someone's afraid that their creature isn't scary enough, these abilities, some of them are really nasty. I can share the Lich ability as well, because that is another ability that is present in the Kickstarter, the Emery's Log of Legendary Eminences Kickstarter. The Lich's ability creates this deadly misty fog that surrounds the Lich. And if you go inside, you need to make a constitution saving throw. And if you fail, you're taking necrotic damage. And your life force is being siphoned into the mist and fed to the Lich, and your characters are taking points of exhaustion. But if you are able to get rid of the legendary resistances, target the legendary resistances, the levels of exhaustion get lifted from your characters. So something that we've also wanted to do is start to fix that problem that I alluded to earlier, where sometimes it can feel like your spellcasters and your martial characters aren't doing the same combat. A lot of these legendary eminences, not all of them, but a lot of them act as an aura, where it's going to be kind of hard to get in close to these creatures. And if they close with you, that's going to be painful as well. Now your martial characters will need to collude with your spellcasters, your battle masters, thing like even martial characters that are capable of forcing saving throws. Paladins have their spell smites that could be used to trigger saving throws. So it's not just spellcasters, but now your party will need to collude to figure out how many legendary resistances you're going to need to get through before you start to feel comfortable fighting these monsters up close, because a lot of these abilities get significantly weaker as you go through legendary resistances. So Ben, you were talking about how you can't even remember how many legendary resistances you got through the White Dragon, because it didn't matter. It's either you get through them all and your next spell might land, or you don't get through any of them. Now you'll be able to notice how many legendary resistances you're getting through, because that green dragon is going to be a lot easier to hit with that divine smite if it only has a single mirror image up, because it only has a single legendary resistance left, than it would have been for all three. I think it just adds it complements the tactical levels that we were kind of talking about that are already involved with legendary resistances, and makes the entire party a part of that conversation instead of just your spellcasters.
Yeah, definitely. And do you know what my favorite thing about all of this is, Ray?
What?
You've given me a copy of the book in its current state, which means I can start using it in the games that you're playing in.
Oh. Are you sure you want to do that?
we'll just have to wait and see, won't we? We'll just have to wait and see what happens. Maybe one day.
I'm going to have to start prepping those smites, spell smites.
It all comes back to bite you in the bum in the end, my friend.
Oh, no. Is a Serac going to have one of these?
You don't even want to know what a Serac's got going on. Trust me, you are not ready to even.
Well, don't give him the lich one, because that one's hard.
Yeah. No, I mean, why did I give him that? That doesn't line up.
I play a martial character, so.
What a shame. Oh dear.
No,
don't
do it then.
This is a really great concept, a really great idea. And I'm not just gonna blow smoke up your ass here. I do think that this is a great little thing and I'd say little in the nicest way, because I think we've spoken before, definitely off air, if not on, about the way we differ in our design philosophies. And this is one of those things that is so simple yet so robust that anyone can use it. And this is a really great starting space to pick up this book, look through these eminences, look at the abilities and what they do, use them, but then also use that as a springing board to just go off and start creating your own and making more. Ray, please, please tell people where they can go to back this book.
You can go straight to Kickstarter. Emery's Log of Legendary Eminences. Ben is going to include a link, I'm sure, in the show notes, as he's said many times, as I've heard him say many times before on the show. Definitely head over there sooner rather than later. Right now, honestly. Because this is our first Kickstarter, we think that or at least we wanted to give people who have been listening to our show, to Ben's show, first crack at like the best prices. Ben uses the word little or small, and I take it as a compliment, because this is a very simple thing that is easy. It's that last Lego to add to your boss monster that makes it just so much work went into this. We've been working on this tirelessly for months. Speaking candidly, we will never recoup the cost. there's no chance. But we want to give everybody who has been like loyal listeners of our show and Ben's show and the other people that we collaborate closely with a really good deal. So there's limited numbers of different tiers of funding. And those early tiers are discounted, just to show a true thank you to all of your support. So head over there. And we're running a different giveaway on the Kickstarter site as well. So definitely check that out. And if you want more details about Legendary Eminences and you really want to start using them in a robust way in your game today, On the Kickstarter site, there's a link to get a sample of the product where we will give you the details about how Legendary Eminences work and two Legendary Eminences for the two Celestials that appear inside the book as well. That's the Planetar and the Solar. So those will get you up and running with Legendary Eminences today. You don't have to wait until the Kickstarter is done being funded. But, you know, like, please also fund the Kickstarter. Like, we would super appreciate that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful. Go and check out. There will be a link below in the description. And, of course, there will also be a link to the We Speak Common Twitter where you can head right now. If you're listening to this episode on day of release, there'll be a giveaway tweet where you can enter and grab yourself the chance to get a copy of this book when it's all said and done. The great thing is, as Ray, you have said to me before, and I can see because I'm looking at it in front of me, this book is pretty much done. I mean, it's just like editing and stuff you've got to do, right?
We want to add in one more piece of art. So the book is fully arted. We got a bunch of licensed art, and we used the illustration effect that is present in a lot of Wizards products so that the art is seamlessly blended into the page. So we have all the art done. All of the abilities are finished. So if you if you win the giveaway, you will be getting a copy. There's no risk to you.
Yeah. So go head over to our Twitter, get involved with that. And of course, if you are a member of the We Speak Common Patreon, you are automatically entered into that giveaway too. So don't worry about heading over there. But of course, you know, share the tweet if you want to. That's fine. Do that. But but you are already entered if you're a member of the Patreon. As ever, if you want to get involved with the conversations here, if you want to reach out to myself or Ray, then drop We Speak Common a message. We are We Speak Common at We Speak Common on Twitter, Instagram, and We Speak Common Pod on Facebook. We are We Speak Common at hotmail.com if you want to drop in an email or get involved with Agony Anne. And of course, if you want to support the show and be a part of the private community and join us on Discord for our conversations, for our ongoing chats and rules and tips and sharing and all of that stuff, or maybe even guest on an episode of the show yourself, then head over to our Patreon. It is the best and most favorable way to support this network and the creation of more shows. If that's not your thing, just sharing the episode with people that love D&D is the other amazing best thing that you can do. Ray, first of all, thank you so much for letting your brainchild be a thing and working with the guys to create it and share it with us. But also thank you for coming on this episode. It's been a lot of fun.
It's always a pleasure, Ben. Thanks for having me on. And just thank you.
All right. I'll speak to you soon.
All right. I'll see you.
Thanks for listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your platform of choice and share us with a friend or D&D group near you. If you'd like to directly support the network and the production of new shows like the one you heard today, head to the description of this episode or our social media pages for a link to our Patreon page. You can connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at We Speak Common. The network theme is Street Dancing by Timecrawler 82 and is held under a Creative Commons 4.0 license. You can find it on the Free Music Archive.